Voice of Reason Broadcast Network presents The Heretics Hour with Carolyn Yeager. Carolyn Yeager brings you news and commentary on Holocaust revisionism, World War II history, free speech issues, and more. And now, here's Carolyn.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Carolyn Yeager. Eric Hunt is back on the scene with a new feature-length film critical of Steven Spielberg's Academy Award-winning film, The Last Days. We're going to be talking to Eric, but first I want to announce another film event, a film festival coming up in Orange County, California. Rodney Martin has created what he's calling the first ever critical look at film in the Third Reich. It's taking place on Saturday, February 19th, from 2 p.m. to 9 p.m. Starts at 2 in the afternoon, goes until 9 at night, and it's free. And on top of that, he's giving the people who show up snacks and appetizers. So here's the program at 2 p.m. There will be appetizers and opening remarks. Now, I don't have the exact location of this yet. So when I find out, I'll let you know, but you can also contact him. So at 3 o'clock, he's going to show the film I Accuse. It's a 1941 film addressing euthanasia. It's a well-known film. Excellent. Of course, these are German films. And it's afterwards, there's a film question and answer. And at between 5:30 and 6:30, there's going to be snacks and an intermission program, which would be on showing German weekly news programs in something called Panorama. Then 7 to 8:30 is the second film, Wunschkonzert. It's a 1940 wartime soldiers' request show. I won't describe these today. I can do that later. But also, and following that is a film question and answer. And then there's 8:45 closing remarks. So it sounds excellent. And you can email Rodney for more information at rodneymartin.com. And so now, friends, to my special guest tonight, Eric Hunt. For those who need an introduction, Eric became famous when he was arrested at the tender age of about 21 or 22, I think, for an encounter with Elie Wiesel in the San Francisco hotel elevator landing, and was absurdly charged with attempted kidnapping, among other things. He was eventually found innocent after quite an ordeal of all but one of the charges, he can speak to that if he wants to, or if he doesn't, he doesn't have to. And he gained his freedom again. So he has put this freedom to good use, but I'll let him tell us all about that. So without any further introduction, hello, Eric, and welcome.
Yes, thanks. I just recently released my a documentary I made. It's called The Last Days of the Big Lie, and it's about a Steven Spielberg produced Holocaust documentary titled The Last Days. It was released in 1998 and won the 1999 Academy Award. The problem is the stars of the film are probably the most absurd liars. We've got Irene Zisblatt, who I would consider the main star of the film. The film, The Last Days, is about five Hungarian Holocaust, quote, survivors, and they're telling their story to the Steven Spielberg's film cameras.
Yes, let me ask you a question before you go any further, Eric.
Okay.
You've been working on this film for how long now?
I would say over a year and a half. Like you did mention, once I got, you know, released from grabbing Elie Wiesel by the sleeve and asking him for an interview, I was in jail for a year and a half. After I got released from jail, I was, you know, found innocent of the most serious, absurd, politically motivated charges at trial. I tried forgetting about the Holocaust. I sort of just thought that Elie Wiesel was an isolated incident, that he was a single exaggerator. I still sort of wanted to forget about the possibility even of basically what the Holocaust is, which is a big lie. Basically, as soon as I was released from parole, one of the first things I found was the Herman Rosenblatt story, which is, if you want to describe that real quick.
Well, we can just say that he's just one more in a long string of so-called survivors. He is sort of a survivor who was in a camp and who made up a big story afterwards about what happened. And his story was a kind of a romantic story about how he met his future wife. Oh, it's just all nonsense. But we want to kind of stick with the film. Yeah. So you found that, and what you're saying is that. You started to see the huge nature of this big lie.
Well, almost immediately from the Rosenblatt story, he claims, little girl threw an apple over a concentration camp fence for years, or at least a year. Anyway, I found out about Irene Zisblatt, and she claims she repeatedly defecated and swallowed diamonds for a year and a half while in Auschwitz and on death marches. And the more I looked at the story, the more I saw parallels between Elie Wiesel and how that was crammed down my throat as a school child. Mm-hmm. And I decided that if I was going to go back into Holocaust denial or Holocaust revisionism, I was going to make sure that I had all of my facts lined up, that I was 100% sure. So I bought Irene Zisblatt's autobiography, The Fifth Diamond, and once I read that, I was completely shocked. I began to totally understand the nature of this absurd hoax. She claims in the book that,
I think a lot of most of our listeners, know about that, and they will certainly find out about it by your film. So let's get into your film.
Real quick, she claims she escaped from becoming, she was selected to become a lampshade because of her smooth skin. She claims Dr. Mengele removed her Auschwitz tattoo. She claims she escaped from inside a gas chamber and a young boy threw her naked over the concentration camp fence into an open train, which brought her to a labor camp. I mean, these are only some of her bigger lies. And from there, I read in her autobiography about the Steven Spielberg's USC Survivors of the Shoah Visual History Foundation. And this is Steven Spielberg's collection of, in the 90s, he videotaped 50,000 so-called survivors and witnesses, supposedly, to the Holocaust. And I accessed Irene Zisblatt's videotape testimony, and maybe some people you've definitely seen the videos. They're just absurd, and that's only the tip of the iceberg. My film covers.
Yeah. So you ran into Irene Zisblatt first. That's what something I was going to ask you. Whether you learned about Spielberg's documentary first, and then learned from that about Zisblatt, but it was the other way around.
I learned about Zisblatt first. And I actually got all my facts lined up about her absurdities, and I actually sued Zisblatt and Spielberg and her book publisher back in 2010, just to let them know that they didn't, Irene Zisblatt has a quote, they took everything away from me, but I won't let them take my soul. And that's sort of how I felt. And that's, it felt really good to sue Steven Spielberg and Irene Zisblatt.
Yeah, that's great, Eric. I've never heard you say that. That makes all kinds of sense. So, that's part of you went through a tremendous experience there in that justice system. And, these Holocaust survivors, they talk about all their suffering and what all they went through. And no, you know, all kinds of people go through terrible things because of, yeah, of the political forces that are in control at the time. And you are one, so you certainly needed to unwind. Yeah. You needed to work that out, and yeah, you're a very courageous.
Thanks. But one of the things I got from going through my trial, I sort of gained a newfound, you could say, trust in the justice system. But another thing was I definitely wanted to put these Holocaust promoters on trial, and it's definitely been done before, but now they're on the defense. I think our side, revisionists, have been we haven't put them on the defensive enough, I don't think. And
I agree.
I basically was just debunking Zisblatt, but then I found out about, I sort of also knew about her involvement in Spielberg's Academy Award-winning documentary, The Last Days. So, you know, as I look into the participants of the documentary, I began to realize that the documentary itself it's a microcosm of the greater Holocaust myth, you could say. It's got a black American soldier who claims to have liberated, I believe it was Dachau.
Dachau. And then you have, now there's a question I have for you written down here, that I don't really understand because I have never watched The Last Days, but I only saw some clips of it. If this was, as you said, it was about five, Hungarian Jews who were sent to Auschwitz. And then how did this, Paul Parks, the black GIA who falsely claimed he liberated Dachau, how did he get into that?
Well, there's a small segment about the liberation of the camps, and they show a white American soldier, a black American soldier, and even a Japanese American soldier, and, you know, the propaganda artists that they are, they claim that they all had an equal part in the liberation of Dachau and the concentration camps. Yeah, there are only about four other minor characters featured in the film, other than the main five survivors.
So why did they add this? Why do you think Spielberg added this liberation section?
My opinion,
since it was all supposed to be outfits.
Yeah, my opinion, it's just to incite hate against European people by using the African American person. But going back onto Paul Parks, who is this black American soldier who claimed to have liberated Dachau, shortly after The Last Days was released, the Boston Globe found out there were no black American soldiers that liberated any of the main concentration camps, and they found out that Parks' unit was hundreds of miles away from Dachau at the time it was liberated. Mm-hmm. So Paul Parks and Spielberg's Oscar award-winning documentary claims that he shot a German officer, and the filmmakers make it look like it was in Dachau. Paul Parks says he saw emaciated survivors. Anyway, what's really, really interesting is Paul Parks, this wasn't his first appearance in an Oscar-nominated Holocaust documentary hoax. He was one of the stars of the film Liberators, which its entire thesis was that black soldiers basically broke down the gates of Buchenwald and Dachau, and this is a complete lie. The film was exposed as a complete hoax in the early 90s and was withdrawn from public airing. Yet Spielberg and his crew still chose Paul Parks years later to star in his film to carry forth their message, which it's really just a message of hate towards German people and European people. That's basically the only conclusion that can be brought from these absurd lies.
Yes. Okay, that's very interesting, because, you know, as I've told you, that the part with Paul Parks and the Black Liberators and so on was one of the most interesting of all to me, because I wasn't I knew about it, but I tend to forget some of these things, well, and then I have to be reminded. But this brings up something that back to Irene Zizblatt.
Hold on a second. Our friend Weasel appears in the Black Liberators segment. Remember?
Yes.
He joined in on the hoax.
Well, he does that.
yeah. He claimed in his memoirs that he'll never forget a black soldier who they tried to put on their shoulders at liberation. He actually screws up the story. He steals it from the chief rabbi of Israel, who tells a similar story in the Liberators hoax documentary. But that's Weasel, Nobel Peace Prize winner.
What that shows to me is that all of these survivors who are busy building up the story all the time are reading each. They're looking and reading and watching everything, and then they get ideas from others and they join in. You know, they add that to their story. Weasel wrote that in his 1995 memoir. So he was, he was looking for things to write about. He never mentioned that before that I know of.
Yeah. No, he saw the movie.
Right. So now here's the thing about Spielberg. You know, you just mentioned that he, knowing that Paul Parks had been lying in a previous film and that this whole black liberation thing was false, he went ahead and put all this, and along with Parks and a few others who are really strange, clearly not telling the truth, into his new film about The Last Days. Now, the other thing I want to bring up then was back to Irene Zizblatt along these same lines. Yeah. You point out that the Spielberg people, on her Shoah Foundation interview, she talked about swallowing these diamonds and defecating them and then keeping them that way. And then the Spielberg people called her up on the phone, and they were interested in her being in this film that that Spielberg was going to make because of her diamond story. That's what they said, and you brought that out in the film. But then you didn't go too much further with that. But the thing is, it's like, why did they want, what part did they play in the buildup of this diamond story of hers? Because as you make out in her book, which she finally writes later, she builds that story way up beyond what she had done originally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in her original testimony for the Shoah Foundation, she claimed, that she was, when she was being processed into the camp, she saw that they were checking for valuables, so she said she swallowed diamonds that her mother gave her, and that's the only mention she has in the entire 3.5-hour testimony. But later on, when Spielberg's crew call her up and said they saw her testimony, would really like to have her star in their film, she says that they asked about what happened to the diamonds, and I would say it's most likely that Zizblatt invented the story about repeatedly defecating them and finding them and swallowing them for a year and a half afterwards to become a memorable Holocaust promoter. That's her calling card. I mean, she didn't have this prop before this prop.
I understand what you're saying, but they were very interested in that part, which is kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
So it just to me, what it's showing to me is that they don't care about the truth. Along with any of these people, they are only looking for something dramatic and memorable and so on and crazy. And they get away with it because that crazy documentary won Academy Award and it's considered this fantastic piece of history.
Yeah. There's two major shiny props that they use to emotionally fool the gullible viewer. One is the prop of Irene Zizblatt's supposedly defecated diamonds mounted into a teardrop-shaped pendant.
Yes.
And that specific prop, I guess that's what we're talking about, that was made, that had to be made or decided to be used to tell this story after the original testimony of hers, but before the making of The Last Days.
That's
but
right.
Specifically, this prop was used first for Spielberg's fictional documentary.
Right.
And the,
right. Yep. So they went along with a gigantic fraud in that.
Yeah, I mean,
that's one of them. And the other one, they went along with this gigantic fraud about Paul Parks when it had already been exposed. Well, and I'm sure you can find a lot more.
Well, not only that, Paul Parks is still, his entire testimony is still on the main site of the Shoah Foundation. They love, it's part of their curriculum, the ADL and the Shoah Foundation partner and teach kids these lies. You know, Paul Parks' shiny prop is a menorah.
Oh,
he claims,
exactly.
Yeah,
yes.
He claims is made out of nails by a concentration camp, and they... his story
is
hilarious.
That was fantastic. That is just a fantastic... And the way you handle these things in the film, Eric, you've really done a magnificent job. I mean,
thanks
the way it comes out, that we're talking about this, and then all of a sudden we learn that this menorah is something that's mass-produced. Anybody can get one. And he's telling this story that is specially made for him.
Yeah.
And then this woman... This interviewer says, well, who made it? He says, oh, I don't know. I never. She said, well, there's a name on it. And she gets up and looks at it, and she reads the name. And he said, oh, yeah, there is a name, but I could never read it. And she reads it immediately. And he says, oh, yeah, Slyberger or something. He says, yeah. I mean, it's just, and they leave that in there.
Yeah, it's, they don't cut any of the Shoah Foundation videos. But it is. There are comedic aspects to the movie, you could say. I'd say the Zisplat, some of her just complete, just lying is just, a lot of people have told me they've laughed hysterically as she tells her silly stories about, escaping from inside a gas chamber and such. But, as far as the menorah, I'm coming very close to confirming that he did receive that menorah in 1989, at the Boston Pops. It was, I believe, the 45th anniversary of the creation of the State of Israel, and he received it at a ceremony, and chose to say that a Dachau survivor that he liberated, someone showed up at his front door and didn't tell who they were or who wanted them to have this. It's just unreal. It's very hard to sort of imagine all of these big lies, but
I guess
the best way is to see the documentary, and it's at holocaustdenier.com. That's my website. And
yes, say that again. We're coming to our break, Eric. So tell people where they can see the film right now.
The documentary is called The Last Days of the Big Lie, and it's available at holocaustdenier.com. There are some copies.
And that's where
around.
They can donate also.
Yeah, we're trying to improve the documentary as well as get the word out there.
We're going to have to go. We're going to have to take our break, and we'll continue with this as soon as we come back. Stay with us, ladies and gentlemen.
We'll be right back with more on The Heretics Hour. You're listening to VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com.
Now, Turkey has condemned the findings of an Israeli inquiry into the bloody raid on a Gaza-bound aid flotilla last May. The report ruled that the storming of the ships by Israeli troops did not violate international law. 9 Turkish activists on board the flotilla that aimed to break through the Gaza naval blockade were killed during the raid. RT's Paul Sleer has more.
The Israeli report says that the soldiers acted in self-defense. It examined 133 cases and found that in 127, the soldiers were legally justified in the way they acted. It says in these six other cases, it simply does not have sufficient information. Now, the primary point that the Israeli Turkle Commission is relying on is that the way the soldiers, the commander unit, acted did not break international law, because it was quite clear, they say, that this Gaza-bound flotilla intended to break the Israeli blockade on Gaza. Now, the Israeli Defense Minister Ehud Barak has praised the findings of this report. He says it proves that Israel is a law-abiding country. But many activists, and one of them being an Israeli member of parliament who belongs to an Arab party, Hanim Zouabi, she was part of that flotilla. She has come out in heavy criticism, saying that it ignores the killings of nine Turkish activists. Eight of them were Turkish citizens and one was a Turkish-American citizen. We expect more international criticism as the day progresses. We also know, though, that the flotilla, the incident, of course, which happened on the 31st of May, has already received international condemnation.
No commission of inquiry in the world can justify deliberately restricting the passage of people and goods in order to paralyze the economy and prevent normal life from taking place in Gaza. And I'm sorry to say that's exactly what the Israeli policy did. We think that the lesson from the flotilla incident should be that Israel has a right to prevent weapons from entering Gaza, but it doesn't have a right to do what it's still doing, which is to prevent purely civilian goods from coming in and out in order to punish the population. You have to remember, Israel controls Gaza's borders, and that control creates obligations. When you control a civilian population, you're responsible for their rights. And the law of occupation says that even under circumstances of security risks, you have to allow people to lead normal lives. So students need to be able to travel from Gaza to the West Bank in order to study. Families need to be able to travel back and forth in order to be reunited with each other. And merchants in Gaza have a right to sell their goods outside of Gaza. Israel can certainly inspect the goods and make sure there's no security threat, but that's all it can do. I'm sorry to say that that's not the case right now. And the commission made a disturbing finding when it said that those civilian restrictions could be legal under international law. That's what we disagree with.
The Turkish National Inquiry submitted its findings to the United Nations back in September last year. Of course, now it is up to the UN Secretary General to examine both the Israeli and the Turkish reports and release its own conclusions. We have no indication as of yet when that will be. But the Turkish Commission...
Let's return to the Heretics Hour, brought to you by VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Carolyn Yeager, and with me is Eric Hunt, the creator of the new film that has just been released on the Internet, which is entitled The Last Days of the Big Lie, a critical look at Steven Spielberg's award-winning documentary, The Last Days, which is also full of lies, so about the big lie. So, Eric, there's still a couple of parts of the film that I'd like to mention to you and talk to you about. I would say the part that hit me the strongest, but that's because I'm familiar with some of the others more, was the Kuwaiti part with Tom Lantos. Of course, to me, Tom Lantos is such a fraud. I mean, he's not a charming fraud. He's just totally unlikable. And I don't like his voice or his accent or anything about him. And that was such a powerful piece. So what would you like to say about that?
Yeah, for many years, people have known about the Kuwaiti incubator story, which is that after Kuwait was invaded by Iraq in the early 90s, the Kuwaiti government basically, through front groups, etc., tried putting forth various atrocity lies to convince the American public to support a war against Iraq. And the major atrocity lie that really sold the war was the Kuwaiti incubator hoax. And this was specifically sold by a young girl who appeared at Tom Lantos's Human Rights Caucus and said that she personally saw Iraqi soldiers throw Kuwaiti babies out of incubators.
Yes, but the thing is that But the thing is that Tom Lantos is one of the stars of Spielberg's documentary, along with Irene and the others. And he is a big Holocaust survivor who became a politician in the United States, representing a district in California. Yeah. And so he's playing this up, and he's a part of this whole fraud. And then he's bringing in the Holocaust as often as he can to compare it to what the Iraqis supposedly did, which is all a big lie. It's just, and the way you have handled it, and the way you have cut things back, and you know, you do your cutting and your editing, and you don't do a lot of it. You're not doing that kind of propaganda film type editing where they jump around from this, that, and the other thing to give you a totally wrong idea. You know, you stay on things long enough, which is why it's why the film is long, I guess, so that we see that it's all in context, and you know, you're not taking things out of context. And, and what was really strong was when you showed this daughter, who was testified, you know, as herself, I mean, as a young girl. Then later, there was this a part in a film where they showed, had this woman all draped in her burkas and stuff, and with a baby, and complaining about what was done and to her. And you say, this is the same girl, the ambassador's daughter. And then the voice, you realize it was exactly the same voice. That was
exactly.
That really, I thought, my, these people, there's nothing's too low for them to stoop to.
No, and that's a new discovery. Thankfully, we Holocaust deniers will take credit for it. Yeah, the what I show in the film is most of the Human Rights Caucus hearing that Tom Lantos put on, where these various people tell a bunch of hoax atrocity lies. And that girl you're talking about that was telling the incubator story, she spoke perfect, unaccented English, but she was supposedly from Kuwait. It turns out she was a Kuwaiti ambassador's daughter. But what hasn't been discovered yet is that almost, I would say, everyone that appears at this hearing is lying. And it's been well known that they were all coached by a public relations firm that had their offices in Lantos's human rights, same office building as Lantos's Human Rights Caucus. But yeah, there's a new discovery. I'd say that the Kuwaiti government front group, Citizens for a Free Kuwait, play a bunch of show a foundation like clips of supposed Kuwaiti refugees, and one of them is I would say I'm 100% sure it's the ambassador's daughter in a burqa playing a different character. She's holding a baby, and another baby's coming over to pet the baby or put the pacifier in, and she's telling some silly story about the Iraqis threatening to kill her baby.
Yeah, but in this voice that's all quivering.
Yeah, and it's Tom Lantos knew all along that the woman was the ambassador's daughter, and obviously knew that her testimony was a lie. And this is important because, you know, as that one congressman says, what happens at that meeting today will set the course for the next 10 years. And, you know, what happened about 10 years later, 9/11. This hearing of atrocity hoaxes that pushed us into war with Iraq the first time is really what has gotten us into every war in the Middle East since, and it's all because of a Jewish orchestrated phony atrocity hearing headed by Tom Lantos.
Yeah, what you're saying, I like what you're saying, Eric, because people think, oh yeah, they uncovered that fraud of that Iraqi ambassador's daughter. But see, you're saying there's a lot more fraud that hasn't been uncovered. And this is so typical of where when something does get exposed, they try to stop it at a certain point, and the public is satisfied, and too many people are satisfied and say, well, that's, you know, shows. But there's a lot more, and this is why we need people like you who are doing what you're doing. Well, we need a lot of us people, but because we need to keep digging deeper, because it is incredible what is actually going on and how much is false. And yeah, we have to find what is really false, because a lot of people are saying that things are fake and false that aren't. So it's a very mixed up situation. Uh-huh. Well, let's move on. I want to point out that how happy and thrilled I was about the last part of your video, your film. You call it a video, but I'm trying to remember to call it a film. Because that's what it is. And that is these people who were not in Spielberg's film, who were saying nice things, not nice things maybe, but decent things, truthful things about their experience. And you came up, I've got six of them, you came up with that was amazing what they said, and they verify what I wrote in my book that came out last year on my trip to Auschwitz, the underground guided tour of Auschwitz, which I point out all of these facilities, and people say, well, but you know, how do you know that was really there? Now here are these people you've got on your film talking about every one of those things.
Yes, yeah. For Spielberg's film, he has 50,000 video testimonies to choose from, so he chose a bunch of liars such as Irene Zisblatt and Paul Parks. But I went through some of the 50,000 testimonies, and I found a lot of people telling some things about the camps that certainly the Jews would never tell about in a documentary. What are some of your favorite things that they talked about?
Oh, well, I particularly liked the first woman who said that she was copying... They put a grand piano on block one, and then the guy who was in charge of all that, you know, one of the detainees, was looking for people to help to create a stage and so on, at Auschwitz. And so, and she was the one who was helping to sew the curtain rings, and then she copied musical scores for the individual instruments. And then, her other job was to go out and pick leaves for making tea for the whole camp, which shows you that they had stuff growing for food, you know, food, and there they had some herbs, and she was out picking the tea for the camp. Another man told about the library, where not only books but newspapers were available. Now, there's something that you never hear.
This was Buchenwald. Yeah, they got paid in
That coupons. Was in Buchenwald. Okay.
Yeah.
And, I thought these were all at Auschwitz.
That man did go to Auschwitz later, but that was first at Buchenwald in the early days of the war. Yeah, they got paid in coupons for either their labor or just basically just paid...
just to have spending money,
Yeah, and they could receive mail, of course, and the Jewish committee sent them money through the mail, and they could write mail. This man says he used his coupons. You could buy things in the canteen. He said one of the things available in the early years was weak beer. So the inmates could, at Buchenwald, could buy beer from the money that the Nazis gave them. You know, those terrible Germans. But this is something. There are a lot of different things covered in that segment that the Jews don't want out at all. They want these absurd lies about defecating diamonds, etc. They don't want any of the truth about the soccer games that went on at Auschwitz, Monowitz, Gross Rosen, how they were supplied with equipment from the civilians in the nearby towns to play the soccer games on. I show a soccer tournament scorecard from, I believe, Theresienstadt. There's another woman who's... This is Auschwitz, tells about how it's basically Auschwitz daycare. She talks about how she painted the walls in the children's barracks to look like Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. She painted characters from Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. They put on a play, a satirical play, about, I believe, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, and the SS watched them. You know, they had costumes.
She helped the children do all this.
They made arts and crafts to make the crown for the princess. Yeah, this is the kind of stuff that few people actually know, even in the denial community, I'd say, but it's the truth. And, you know, of course, the other side will say, oh, you're trying to make it appear like it was a summer camp. No, I'm not. I'm just saying the truth.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, it was in these camps until towards the end. It was
exactly
livable. It was meant to be livable. People detained for one reason or another, and that's another story. I won't go into too much because I do want to move on to you end your film with The Big Lie, which is from Hitler's Mein Kampf. And are you concerned with the criticism you will get from some that you talk about, that you bring in Adolf Hitler in a rather, I don't know that you bring him in a positive way, but you do point out that he wrote that business about the big lie about what he thought the Jews were lying about, that the Jews lied.
Yeah, well, someone had said to me it's well done because it's him using his own words in his own defense. And you earlier said you didn't want to go into why the Jews were interned in the first place, but, you know, what I say is Hitler interned them because they were and have created this big lie, the Holocaust. And it's because they were subversives that they were detained, not because of how they looked, but because how they've acted throughout history. For Hitler specifically, World War I. But the big lie is about how the Jews were the masters of this technique where they would just tell an unimaginable lie and mostly use emotions to trick people into believing it. Because while most people tell small lies, they would never imagine that someone or even a whole community of people, such as the Jews, could tell such a big lie. And I use it, and I think at the end of the movie, it works very well in the context of this conspiracy fact, which is that Spielberg and one of the top Jewish historians who's behind the creation of the Holocaust Museum made this completely fictional, absurd, Oscar award-winning documentary, and they knew they'd get away with it.
I agree. I think it ties in because of your title is very good, very good. The last days of the big lie, and then you end with the big lie quote. And everybody's familiar with that, but they're not familiar with what it really meant and who it came from.
Yeah,
a lot of people think it was Goebbels. A lot of people think, Goebbels, said that.
Oh,
that's what he was up to.
Some congressman or something said that just recently. Yeah, some people have said I've been a little too hard on the Jews or whatever, that I should just point out the facts.
Well, some people bring up the language. What do you have to say about that?
There's not really cursing other than one word, which is...
Yeah, word. I think you should actually take that out. I agree with that one.
Yeah.
Most of them, I think it's all right. A lot of people have said, you shouldn't keep calling them liars. But that's what the whole video is, the whole film is about. It's about lies, and they are. And I think you need to do that because people who don't understand will look at it and they'll say, well, maybe he's cut something. Maybe these people aren't lying. Maybe that's the truth. You know, you have to say it so that they're forced to deal with that question.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want people to come to some... You know, when this is eventually exposed in the mainstream and Steven Spielberg is going to have to publicly comment hoax he's created, you know, he'll try and say that, we just wanted to teach tolerance, etc. We apologize for the small factual mistakes, but, you know, we're not going to let him get away with it. We're going to, I don't want any moderates at the end of the video. I want people to be upset that they've been so brainwashed. Steven Spielberg is so arrogant that he knew the people of the world were so stupid to totally swallow Irene Zisblatt's diamond lies and not dare to question it. And, you know, I want them to be, have a reaction that's equal to the reaction that the average brainwashed idiot had after seeing The Last Days. So that's the only way I could describe it.
Well, I agree with you, and I also agree that this is your film. I mean, I think that this is your film, and people can should only give so much, you know, criticism or whatever, or suggestions, I should use that word, because, it's not their film, and whatever, the artist is the one that has to really, he has to do it from his own feelings and ideas and beliefs, and not try to please everybody. So that makes it stronger. Now, one thing I can bring up is that you have put the word Holocaust denier at the end of the film. You have titled your website holocaustdenier.com. And I noticed that during this interview, you have been calling what we normally call Holocaust revisionists. You've been using the term Holocaust denier. So speak to that, please.
Well, we're taking the word Holocaust denier, which has been used to slander us, and we're flipping it around. I would say myself and Denier Bud, I don't want to speak for him, but his one third of the Holocaust videos at he calls himself Denier Bud. He calls himself a Holocaust denier. I also agree with that term. You know, Holocaust promoters. It's almost like how the black community has taken the word nigger and turned it around, and they call each other, you know, N-I-G-G-A, nigga, as a term of friendship or, but,
It's not a negative connotation, so you're trying to change the connotation?
Yeah, exactly. I'm proud to be called a Holocaust denier. You call me a liar, that's a different story. We don't like the term revisionist either. That's another thing. While I'm speaking for myself, it just brings up like someone with a red pen just making small changes in the false history. The entire thing is almost a complete fraud, and I deny it. You know, the only thing I can bring up as a parallel is the Exodus story. I deny the Exodus story. I deny the Holocaust. I like the term better. It's a stronger term. I'm a Holocaust denier.
Well, it's clear you do like it. I'm clear about that. And that will be one thing that will be debated. And now what is your age at this time, Eric, so that everyone knows?
I'm 26.
26. I thought you were even older than that. That's, you know, you're amazingly young. And I want to say that you have to be careful.
Yeah.
You are young, you have done a lot, you have a tremendous future ahead of you of doing this work, and so you have to be seen as a tremendous threat. And I want to ask you, you know, tell you, I'm always giving you this kind of motherly advice, you know, you should not go out alone. You should not go anywhere alone anymore. Do you think about that, or?
Yeah, I'm real worried about it. I put on, you know, I have a mailing address on my site for donations, and I'm certainly worried about it.
Honestly, I'm glad you're worried about it. I don't want it's a shame you have to lose your freedom, but, you know, it's like this is the price.
The most, I guess I'll say it publicly again, the thing I'm worried about most is they've claimed I've had a psychological issue in the past. I'm worried about them, you know.
Yes. Yes, well, that's exactly right.
Trying to fake something and blame it on me or something, you know. But,
Right. You know, I want to say I have come up with the idea, well, because of some things I've heard recently, I was deciding that I'm going to announce on my show, and I'm going to do it now with you, that, well, I don't think anything like that's going to happen to me, but if I should be found dead, and there should be some story that I left a suicide note or that I killed myself, or, you know, and they somehow are able to show that I have had some mental depression or whatever. I want to let people know right now that I will never kill myself. I will never commit suicide. I'm very happy. I love what I'm doing. I'm healthy. I have never had any mental problems. I get up in the morning and I'm raring to go and happy. And I don't even want, you know, it's hard for me to go to bed at night because I don't want to stop what I'm doing. But I'm not overly obsessive. I mean, my life is great, and so I am never going to do that, and I want everybody to know it. And if that anything like that should happen, everybody should protest and at least not believe it. and say...
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, me too.
With you. Yes.
But the goal, and I definitely see it happening, the Oscar award these scam artists won for this movie, it's going to be revoked. It's going to be given back somehow. Either the Academy is going to be...
That's your goal.
The Academy is going to be shamed into demanding it back, or it's going to be a Milli Vanilli situation where these, you know, they're the guys that won the Grammy Award for, they didn't even sing on the album, but they were just the front people and they gave back their Grammy Awards. Well, a similar thing is going to have to happen with this fraudulent documentary. What we want to do is we want to target mainstream journalists. We want to send them the link to the last days of the big lie. We want them to confront it. We want people who originally reviewed the last days in 1999 to realize what a big mistake they've done, how they've been had. You know, I don't think we can really do this just in the alternative media. We have to get one or two. They don't even have to be on our side in the mainstream media. They just have to expose the truth about Spielberg, and I think it's possible. They've already tried it with Paul Parks and his phony story up in Boston. So I would say that if you've seen the video, you really like the message, you want to spread the message, you want to get Spielberg publicly shamed to giving back his Oscar award for his phony Holocaust documentary, we want to target mainstream journalists by email with the link to this video and the facts about it.
Very good. And also, you have a special project. I want people to know that you have a special project that you do need money for. And I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
And you don't want to talk about it. But people need to remember, I want to tell them, you don't like to ask for money. It's obvious, but you have to. But people really need to donate so that you can do some of this special work that you need to do. It requires some money. And so I've been pushing that. And, you know, Eric, I want to tell you that you're going to have to come back on the show another time because we didn't get to talk about so many things that we would like to talk about. And I hope this wasn't too just disjointed for the listeners, and I hope they're not disappointed that we couldn't get into more things. But it's been a great hour, and what would you like to, is there a little bit more you want to leave the listeners with?
I would just mainly just, I need everyone's help in spreading the link to mainstream, into the mainstream. We've gotten over 4,000 hits on, someone else uploaded it to YouTube, and we've got 4,000 hits already just on that other guy's page. I've got over 1,000 hits on my personal copy of the video.
On your website. Now let's give that again, ladies and gentlemen. That is HTTP, or maybe you can also put in www. I'm not sure, but holocaustdenier.com, and that's where you can donate online, and that's where the address is if you want to mail your donation in. So if you just go to YouTube, you won't see that. So you know have to go to holocaustdenier.com. For that, and you click on donate.
Yep, I've got my mailing address there, and then there's another version. Of course, we've all been banned from PayPal, all of us.
Well, okay, and so thank you very much, Eric. It's been a great pleasure, and I hope you will be back again soon, and we'll update what's going on with this whole situation.
Yeah, thanks very much, definitely.
And ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening. Good night.
Thanks for listening. The Heretics Hour returns Monday evening, 9 p.m. Eastern U.S. time. Join us at ReasonRadioNetwork.com.